Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the stations you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, also the views of our guests. This evening we have Byron Richards with us, who deals with nutrition, has written a great book called Fight for Your Health, and Byron's going to be telling us this evening about a story he just broke that deals with a company called Bayer. Well, we always think of Bayer aspirin, but Bayer is a German company that has a very, very questionable past, and it has a very questionable present at the present time because they've been involved in a cover-up that is going to cost an awful lot of people and may have already cost many people their lives. And so I'm going to let Byron tell you about his story and about the past actions of this company. And the problem with this is that many of our major corporations are guilty of killing people in this country, and nothing is ever done to them. The tobacco companies knew exactly what they were doing when they addicted people to a product to produce cancer, not only for the lung, but of the pancreas and bladder. They knew that tobacco did that. They also knew that tobacco, of course, would influence the lungs as well and produce chronic pulmonary disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. They knew all of these things. And yet, of course, they marketed this, and they consistently lied about the health consequences, and they lied before Congress. And, you know, although, of course, the companies had to put up a great deal of money, nobody was ever prosecuted for lying, even though it cost literally millions of lives here in the United States. So with that as a background, let's get on to Byron's recent article on the Bayer Company. Go ahead, pick up the story there, Byron.
Well, good evening, Stan. How are you doing this
evening? Doing just fine. It's good to have you back.
Well, it's nice to be with you and to share some of this information that's happening in our world of big pharma, which seems to be as bent on making money and keeping people sick or injuring them as anything else. Certainly that's the impression that we sometimes get in the recent example here, the story breaking last week where Bayer hid intentionally, at least apparently it was intentional, data from the FDA showing that a drug that they use in cardiovascular bypass surgery was actually causing serious health problems, kidney failure, stroke, increased risk of death. And Bayer was in possession of this information as the FDA held an advisory panel on the safety of their drug. And the Bayer scientists did not disclose to the FDA advisory panel that they were well aware that this drug was, in fact, very, very dangerous.
Well, didn't somebody from Bayer actually appear before the panel and put out information, withhold information?
Well, that's right.
This
the Bayer
study?
Scientists testified to the safety of this medication 10 days ago in front of the advisory panel, claiming and trying to convince the FDA that it was, in fact, safe when used as intended. So what happened was that one of the researchers Bayer had commissioned an independent research to be done on this medication. And in this independent research, the researchers looked at 67,000 patients who'd been through cardiovascular bypass surgery, where 30,000 of them had used the Trazodone medication. It's intravenously given as part of the protocol. Patients generally do not understand or know that they're getting it, so there's no free choice in this. The other 37,000 people did not receive this. And what Bayer discovered was that the people taking their medication had much higher rates of stroke, kidney failure, and serious, the increased risk of death. And so this information was withheld.
Go right ahead there.
Very serious problem with holding this from the public, obviously done for the profits of Bayer, who the drug was supposed to triple in growth this year. So that's why it was being done.
And, of course, fortunately, there was an honest man. He was one of the independent researchers, and he contacted the FDA, and he told them, you better look into this this study, you know, because, of course, here's what is written. He must have told them exactly what had happened, and there was a significant increase in all sorts of heart attacks and kidney failure and certainly in strokes, you know, associated with the use of this medication. So they were simply playing games and risking people's lives, and but what did the FDA do when, of course, they learned about the terrible results of this study?
Well, that's part of the problem. The FDA did post on their website that Bayer had withheld information from them during their investigation, but this was more of a cover your own rear end because the FDA had been blindsided by one of the, you know, by Big Pharma. So the announcement on the FDA website was more about making themselves look good compared to protecting the Americans who are taking the drugs, meaning they did not take the drug off the market, even though it has these serious risks associated with it.
And, of course, I think the most interesting thing is how many doctors ever go to the FDA website to look and see what's there. Now, I know when I practiced medicine, I never went to the FDA website. In fact, I never would have thought of it. And, of course, then how do we get the information to the cardiac surgeons all across America who are using the drug? Are they sending out some sort of a notification to these doctors?
Notification, Dr. Stan, but the point is, they sent the same notification out back in December when the New England Journal of Medicine reported that this drug, Prazolol, significantly increased the risk for kidney failure. And as a result, 10,000 Americans each year were experiencing kidney failure requiring lifetime dialysis as a result of this medication. And an outcome from surgery that was completely and totally unnecessary. The problem here is that the FDA really has mud on their face because they've really known that this huge problem has existed for at least 9 months, if not much longer. And they have just dragged their feet, letting Bayer reap hundreds of millions of dollars of drug sales. And, of course, they put together one of their advisory panels, which always vote in favor of Big Pharma, which they're kind of stiff anyway. They don't really...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with you in just a moment here. Well, anyway, Byron is saying that the FDA apparently... Now, did they mail out some sort of a warning on this? What did they do?
Well, I don't know their exact notification, but it was posted on their website, and usually these notices do go out at least electronically, if not mailed out. So you would assume that there would be some warnings going out to the physicians. But like I say, the warning is no different than the one they already gave them 9 months ago, because most of this data was already suggested in two studies. And so this new study, though, that Bayer commissioned itself to try to figure out if this was really a problem or not, just rest assured that if Bayer had found something positive about the drug, they for sure would have been telling the FDA advisory panel how safe their drug was based on this new study that they had commissioned. But instead they did something that, in my opinion, is extremely illegal. They essentially withheld the information that they were even conducting a study, much less the fact that the outcome was known and the outcome was extremely negative. And so when Bayer was questioned as to why they did this, they did admit it was a mistake, but I mean, this is, to me, is much more than a mistake. I mean, this is outright deception. They were caught red-handed, deceiving the FDA, protecting their drug sales while Americans are being killed and seriously injured.
And I think that's really is the basic theme of this, is that, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to have to look after your own health, and many times your doctor is not going to know about these things. I mean, I will tell you that I still have my medical license. I haven't gotten any sort of a notification. Now, maybe they don't send it out to retired doctors, but you would think they would send it to every doctor. Or you would think they would send it to every doctor doing this type of surgery, to every hospital.
Well, you'd think that, Dr. Stan, but the problem here is that the FDA is hoping this goes away. because the FDA, under the leadership of Andrew von Eschenbach, who is now the temporary head of the FDA, who's up for permanent nomination. His nomination is pending in the Senate right now as we speak. And he's hoping against hope that he can get into permanent status in the FDA without senators asking too many questions about him. So he doesn't want the public to raise any grief about the fact that he's permitted for the last 9 months a dangerous drug to be on the market, a drug the FDA knew was dangerous, and hasn't acted efficiently to get it off the market. In fact, Andrew von Eschenbach would like to make it so that no American can sue a drug company when they're injured. So in the new rules that the FDA put out relating to drug labels in July of this year, they made a policy position legal statement that says that when the FDA approves a drug and states its risks and the drug companies give their best data, if a problem happens, a consumer cannot sue the FDA. That's what they want.
No, wait a minute. They can't sue the FDA or they cannot sue the pharma.
They can't sue Big Pharma. I got a little confused there, Dr. Sam, because the FDA is actually planning on becoming a drug company, which is why they want this rule, because soon consumers would in fact be suing the FDA because the FDA is going into the drug development business with Big Pharma.
The other interesting thing is, of course, that a large part of the income of the Federal Drug Administration comes from the drug companies, not from the government.
Well, that's right. Last year, $250 million, just over 50% of the budget the FDA uses for the approval of new medications, came from user fees provided by Big Pharma. And this is a huge issue because in October of 2007, about a year from now, the FDA must have this whole contract renegotiated. So right now, behind closed doors, the FDA is negotiating hot and heavy with Big Pharma on how much money Big Pharma is going to give them. And Big Pharma is saying, well, we'll give you money, but you can't check into our serious adverse event reporting, and you can't monitor our ads with that money. So here we have a situation, the only situation in the government, where the government's got a responsibility to the American citizens to do safety, and the very people they're supposed to be regulating are paying for the regulation and telling the FDA how they will be regulated. It's like buying protection from the mob. You hire the mob, you get protection. That's what FDA does with Big Pharma. Big Pharma just pays them off, and away they go.
And I really think that this is what the average American doesn't understand. He who pays the piper calls the tune. And the big pharmaceutical agencies are paying half of the budget of the Federal Drug Administration. How critical, how authoritative will FDA dare to be with the people who are paying their salaries? So,
is that the American citizens are paying Big Pharma through their health care costs. So we as citizens are actually paying Big Pharma to control our government, to expose ourselves to risk.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that Bayer has done in the past. I know when we talked about this subject earlier, you were mentioning the situation with hemophilia, where they set out a medication they knew was going to kill hemophiliacs. Would you pick that story up? Because
well,
I think Bayer's people
had
have forgotten that.
That they produced, basically, they provided blood for hemophiliacs.
Well, was and the blood
that
or was
the product
it
that they
the
sold
immune factor, you know, was it factor VIII?
Pardon me?
It was factor VIII, wasn't it?
No, it was actually blood.
Okay.
So to my understanding of it, they prepared blood for use for hemophiliacs. It may have been factor VIII.
I think it was probably factor VIII that they were actually putting out. This is what you give to hemophiliacs to keep them from bleeding. So go ahead with the story.
Okay. Well, at any rate, this was prepared from large batches of blood is where
right.
they got it.
Right.
And so AIDS had gotten into the blood supply that they used to make the product that they were selling. And this, the Center for Disease Control let Bayer know that hemophiliacs, had three cases, had developed AIDS. And so it became very obvious that a blood product of one kind or another that they were taking was the source of this. And Bayer dragged their feet for 2 years trying to evade the issue. as the evidence mounted, that it was their product that was tainted. Well, finally, once the product, the FDA made them stop selling it for use in the United States, Bayer sold it all, they took the same product and sold it all over the world, knowing it was causing HIV infection. And furthermore, even though they knew it was tainted in this way, they continued to produce more of it and sell it around the world as an HIV-infected, tainted product.
What they found actually was, of course, that if you heated this, why, you could kill the HIV virus. Then, of course, you could use it. But instead of taking all of it off the shelves immediately, you know, and then retreating it or even throwing it away and waiting until they had new, they actually sold something they knew was going to kill people, and nobody was ever held responsible. There may have been, there was probably some lawsuits, weren't there?
Well, $600 million that Bayer eventually paid to Hemophiliacs for damages, but it wasn't until 2003 when the New York Times did a very in-depth expose that we even understood what actually happened. Because back when the FDA was trying to get Bayer to take it off the market, none of this was public at all. The FDA and Bayer were operating, just colluding with each other. And in fact, meetings that the New York Times reported on stated that the individual in the FDA in charge was trying to keep it out of the view of the American public and Congress. But when the information came that they were producing more and selling it around the world, he brought Bayer into the offices of the FDA and made them stop doing this, and only then did is there some record of this that was uncovered with Freedom of Information Act requests and so on. But this is just one example where Bayer put profits ahead of human health and clearly you know, put a lot of people who were hemophiliacs at risk for HIV infection.
Well, I think they killed him is what really happened, because, of course, HIV it progresses to AIDS ordinarily, and certainly they live a lot longer today than they used to. But
you're not pulling any punches there, Dr.
Right.
Stan.
And so basically they killed people, and we've lost so many hemophiliacs, not only here but throughout the world. And, of course, if you really believe in cleaning up the gene pool, if you really believe in genetic engineering, this is an excellent means of getting rid of people, tragic people who have a genetic defect.
Right.
But if you're concerned about humanity, you might think it was an inhuman thing to do, but this is the sort of thing that the Nazis did. The Nazis wanted to clean the gene pool, and they wanted
And when we go back to German companies like Bayer, which were part of the IG Farben cartel that, you know, ran, you know, Fritz Termeer was the CEO of IG Farben, which ran the Auschwitz concentration camps and, you know, all the slave labor, the death camps, the medical experimentation. All of this was under his guidance. And, you know, he was treated as a white-collar criminal after World War II and was free and back running Bayer 3 years after the war was over. So, you know, it's just, you know, the Bayer mentality, the Germans, World War II, it was all about eugenics. It was all about racial cleansing. And these ideas permeate big pharma. So they really don't care if they injure a certain number of people or kill a certain number of people. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. You take hemophiliacs, they already consider them, you know, weak or inferior and thus on the easy to expend list. So, you know, it was not a moral problem for them to sell HIV-tainted blood product to them.
Well, I think it's a terrible, tragic situation, and now we find another one of these things, and their response was, well, it was just a mistake. And I don't think these people make mistakes. They're dealing with literally hundreds of millions of dollars, and they don't make mistakes. But after all, if this information got out, why, people would use the old product, which worked far better and was far safer than the brand new one, that they could charge so much more for. And apparently, this is a very effective medication as far as controlling bleeding when you're doing cardiac bypass surgery. But if you're going to die from it, is it really worth it? And apparently, a lot of people were dying and were getting kidney failure and strokes and heart attacks, and it was all being covered up. And you can actually, I've seen several articles in the mainline media at least alluding to this fact. Look it up, find out if it's true. And then we'll be back in just a moment with Byron Richards here talking about what's going on in the healthcare industry and how you're going to have to fight for your own health. Oh, Byron, go right ahead.
Well, another example, Dr. Stant, was in 2001, 2002, Bayer put out a medication called Baycol, which is a statin medication for lowering cholesterol. The problem was is that the Bayer medication wasn't as good as its competitors at lowering cholesterol, and Bayer needed to apply to the FDA for a double dose of their medication in order to be a good competitor in terms of lowering the cholesterol numbers. Well, the problem is that Bayer was well aware that when their medication dose was doubled, individuals had serious side effects, were killed, had the serious muscle problems where the muscle tissue was destroyed, and they knew that, but they withheld it from the FDA and went ahead with their application to double the dose. So once that product got on the market, Americans started dying and being seriously injured. I believe 150 Americans were killed in a very brief period of time with the medication. A lot of permanent muscle damage occurred, and then the FDA took the drug off the market. And, of course, Bayer has now paid over $1 billion in lawsuit settlements. But the point is, Bayer knew it was dangerous. They did it anyway because they needed to do that to make money.
And that's really what's so sad. But, of course, so much of what goes on today has to do with the stock prices. And if you're not making money in this, as a publicly held company, why, of course, the price of the stock goes down. The CEO doesn't get his bonuses, doesn't get his stock options. So they compromise.
Well, that's right. And it's a serious problem, Dr. Stan, because the big pharma cannot make money treating disease. Wall Street is not happy with big pharma when all it does is treat disease. They have to go after our children. They have to go after the baby boomers for prevention with useless statin drugs and bone drugs. I mean, they're near useless for prevention, yet they're being sold to the tune of many billions of dollars in these situations.
Well, I'm going to let you perhaps tell our listeners just a little bit about the statin drugs, because, of course, this is supposedly one of the great advantages of our time, the great advances of our time. And, you know, certainly if you're not taking statin drugs and getting your cholesterol down to 200 to 180 to 170, why you're going to die sooner or later. You're going to die. Of course, the trouble is you're going to die if you do get it down there. You'll probably die a lot happier with a high cholesterol than with a low cholesterol. But why don't you perhaps develop this idea?
Well, you know, the marketing of statin drugs is one of the great examples of superior marketing in the history of the world. There are over $20 billion in statin drugs being sold around the world, to Americans in particular, and these drugs... $20 billion is a lot of money, Dr. Stan. I mean, it's more money than all gross revenues of all professional sports in the United States combined. Basketball, football, baseball, hockey, all. You add them all up, and the one statin drug has more sales than all professional sports. It's really mind-boggling how much they're selling. The problem is that the only evidence that the statin drugs have use that's statistical validity is once a person has had a heart attack, then the use of statins may help reduce the risk of a second heart attack by 30%. That's not a lot, but it's better than nothing. I mean, it does help. And so we see that there is a use for it in a medical context. Now, of course, we've never tested if fish oils or coenzyme Q10 has a better use to prevent a second heart attack, because nobody wants to know that. I mean, the drug companies...
Hold that thought right there. Hold that. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Byron was simply talking about the statin drugs and how, certainly, if you look at the real statistics on the statin drugs, why, if you have never had a heart attack and you take your statin drugs, there's no evidence that taking statin drugs and lowering your cholesterol is going to influence your cardiac morbidity or mortality. If you have had a previous heart attack, why, there is some slight decrease in the incidence of a second heart attack. But many people feel this is related to the anti-inflammatory reaction of the statins and not to lowering your cholesterol. But pick the story up there. There are lots of other things you can
do. Well, here's the thing about it. When they put the statin drug in the preventive test mode and they look at how many lives did we save over a 10-year period by lowering people's numbers with these statin medications, what they were able to determine was that 1% of individuals were saved as a result of this, but another 1% died as a result of it, not due to heart disease, but due to cancer, due to suicide, and due to accidents. So for every life saved, in the preventive sense, from the statin medication, another life was lost as a side effect.
And really, there is a relationship between lowering the cholesterol and getting cancer, isn't there?
Well, there's no question about that. One of the things that LDL cholesterol does is defend the human body from toxicity. And when individuals are living in a polluted environment and eating polluted, contaminated food that has pesticides and all kinds of chemical residues and adulterations in the food itself, the blood can get a higher level of circulating toxin. LDL cholesterol will elevate to defend the person from such toxicity, and so when a statin drug lowers their cholesterol, this defense mechanism is actually stripped away, and individuals are then at significantly higher risk for cancer as a result of having their cholesterol lowered too much when it was actually doing something useful for them.
So if you actually look at the statistics, then you realize, of course, that people are going to die of other things as a direct result of taking the statin drugs. Well, you're no better off at all, but yeah, they're not going to tell you that. Certainly the drug companies are going to tell you that. How much are they making from statin drugs?
$20 billion a year. And most of it is unnecessary use. In other words, there's only a very small percentage of people that this, you know, that the use of it even applies to, you know, as a high-risk follow-up from a previous cardiovascular event. The great majority of this is being given to people as prevention where it does not show it has a public health benefit, and I really can't stand this aspect of it at all, Dr. Stan. They're giving it to people 70 and older where there's absolutely no statistical evidence whatsoever that lowering cholesterol in an older individual increases their lifespan. In fact, it places them at serious risk for cardiomyopathy and for dying from infection.
And what about, of course, what does it do to your brain? Because certainly by lowering the fat, what effect does that have on the brain?
It's very, very significant because brain cells are not like every other cell in the body. Most cells, they split and divide and replicate. Brain cells don't do that. They have to live longer. And because of that, brain cells have more cholesterol in their cell membranes, naturally there, that enhances the structure of a brain cell so that it can live longer. Because, you know, little fragments of cholesterol, now I'm not talking about LDL or HDL, I'm just talking about the little fragments of cholesterol that are in cell membranes that are vital for the three-dimensional structure of a cell. You have to have more of that in brain cells where the brain cells go kaput. They just conk out and they can't function anymore. Well, an animal study, a mouse study came out just recently, oh, it was probably about a year ago, where it was shown that the statin medications at doses comparable to that given to humans, actually lowered the natural cholesterol content of brain cells to the point where they died much more readily. And we see people on statins have progressive nerve cell death, meaning it gets far worse the longer a person is on these medications.
I mean, don't they have some problems with memory?
Memory, suicide, neuropathy, all of these things are common in statin users. And, you know, a person may not notice it the first 6 months or year that they're on it, but it's very clear that the problem is progressive. In other words, the longer it's on it, the worse it gets, especially when they go to one of these super high doses of the medications, trying to really knock down the cholesterol number to these completely abnormal low levels that don't have anything to do with human health.
And, of course, the thing is that your body, of course, wants to maintain the cholesterol level. Most of your cholesterol, a great deal of your cholesterol, is produced by your own liver trying to keep the level that you need. And what are we doing? We're giving people statin drugs. Why? Because we're going to get the number down. And everybody knows if you get a number down, you're going to be a lot healthier. Or are you? We'll be back here in just a moment with Byron Richards, who's written Fight for Your Health, and we'll tell you a little bit more about what he does a little later. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and you were mentioning, Byron, that people sometimes, especially in around 70, and they start putting them onto these statin drugs. They have congestive heart failure. Is there a relationship between the statin drugs and congestive heart failure?
Well, that's right. The heart is a muscle, and one of the side effects of statin medication is that they interfere with the way cells and muscles make energy. And this happens basically 100% of the time. The question is, how bad is it going to be? So if it becomes really bad and the muscle dies completely, that's called, you know, rhabdomyolysis. And that type of problem is very, very severe. But on a lesser basis, people are fatigued, they're tired, they're inefficient energy-wise. These are serious problems. The heart in particular is a suspect because one of the things the statins do is they block the production of coenzyme Q10, and that's vital for cardiovascular function and the muscle function in the heart. And so it's just one of these things where the drug itself is actually capable of significantly damaging the heart, even though it's lowering the cholesterol number.
And I think, of course, a lot of the people who are on cholesterol, lowering drugs, don't they get a lot of aches and pains?
Right. I mean, it's one of these things where lactic acid in greater amount instead of proper aerobic energy production essentially occurs in 100% of the people who take statins. So they're taking a drug that's energy inefficient, which is counterintuitive to longevity, because to live longer, you have to have energy. So anything you're taking that makes energy production worse can't possibly be good for health over the long term. And so that's a big problem with it, yes.
All right, fine. Of course, I think that anybody who's really studied the issue of statin drugs has come to the conclusion that this is one of the greatest scams of all time. Would you agree with that?
Well, I do, in the way the drug is used for prevention in particular. Cholesterol is the backbone of energy production and survival in the human body. So the fact that one of its fractions, LDL cholesterol, has been able to be labeled bad or evil, that must be knocked down, is a horrible, it's just horrible to call LDL cholesterol bad. LDL cholesterol is manufactured in the liver, and it transports all of a person's fat-soluble nutrition, including vitamin A, E, K, coenzyme Q10, all the fat-soluble nutrients, are transported on, LDL cholesterol. That's how it gets through the blood and out to going around to cells and dropping off nutrition to cells. So LDL cholesterol is vital.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Byron Richards. Byron, would you like to get your website out, your telephone number, and tell them a little bit about your book, Fighting
for
Your Health?
In fact, all of the cholesterol information that we've been talking about here, Stan, some 200 studies relating to it, I fully explain and document in my book, Fight for Your Health, Exposing the FDA's Betrayal of America. And I go over this in such great detail because the statin drugs are used as a scam. Nutrient options, diet, and exercise that truly work are not even explained to the public because they're competition to big pharma. So this whole idea is explained in my book. Now, individuals can get the book at wellnessresources.com. That's the website. And, of course, today we have it at 25% off and free shipping for your listeners, Dr. Stan. So if they get on that, that's terrific. Otherwise, you can call in and ask for the same offer. Our toll-free number is 800-717-9355, and we're open for phone calls 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time.
All right. Well, I think it's important that people begin to understand that you can't necessarily trust everything you're being told. Certainly, when you see these products advertised on television, these are being marketed not because they want to help you, but because they really, of course, are concerned with making massive profits. We're talking about billions of dollars. And when you see that blue spiral staircase with the fella going down the blue spiral staircase, and, of course, that's Crestor, and what are they going to do? They're going to lower your cholesterol as you go down the spiral staircase, but If you read what they say in their product brochure, you find out that it really doesn't have any effect on cardiac morbidity or mortality. They figure you won't know what those words mean. One is disease, the other is death. But that's all right. Take it anyway, because you're going to have a low cholesterol. But you may be miserable, might kill you, but you're going to have a low cholesterol. It really does work. Well, what is
having a low cholesterol does not give a person increased survival rate.
Right.
And that's one of the confusions that many people have. When you're suffering from an infection, for example, let's say a person gets pneumonia and they're developing a lot of toxin, and the toxin is elevating in their blood. The elevation of LDL cholesterol is vital for survival in this situation, because elevated LDL cholesterol, which naturally elevates during an infection, binds the endotoxin produced by the bacteria of an infection. And when it does that, it then enables the body not to be poisoned into septic shock from these endotoxins. Well, what happens in individuals on statin-lowering medication is that they can't do this natural response. Thus, if they do get, a significant infection, they are much more likely to die from it than somebody who's not on a statin drug.
Well, I think there's so much our people out there have to learn. What are some of the other things that you really think that the average listener out there needs to learn about?
Well, I mean, in terms of drugs, I think another one of the real classic problems is the bone drugs that are being given, especially to women at a menopausal age and later, and they're being told that these drugs are good for building bone. And what we're finding is that these pictures that they're taking, showing that their bones have more density, the pictures are nothing but swollen bones, like a sprained ankle. And essentially what the bisphosphonate medications, like Fosamax or Actonel, what they do is they disturb the architecture of the bone so that it is chaotic and swollen. And you end up with a bone structure that isn't truly healthy bone, and the longer you take these drugs, the more chaotic and disorganized bone becomes. After about 3 years on the drugs, then the swelling goes away, and all that's left is weak, old bone that's no longer healthy at all. So we have another real scam going on with these bone drugs that are being pushed off on women for the prevention of osteoporosis.
But aren't they getting osteonecrosis, in other words, death of the bone in the jaw? Aren't there an awful lot of...
Well, yes, that's one of the problems, and of course that leads you to ask the question, well, how can something possibly be good for the bones that's killing the jawbone completely dead in some of these cases? And of course, what they found there is that individuals with gram-negative bacterial infections in their mouth, which is fairly common, actually, if they take bisphosphonate drugs, the bacterial infection interacts with the drug and completely kills the jawbone. And a lot of dentists and doctors don't even look for this problem, but now this is a big concern, and there's a number of lawsuits, personal injury suits now being filed on in this regard. But it is a serious problem, this osteonecrosis of the jaw, which originally we just thought happened from the injectable bisphosphonates, but now we're getting case reports that it's actually happening from the oral intake of the bone drugs.
And I think whenever you see these products advertised on television, remember, they're primarily interested in marketing it because there's tremendous profits to be made, but are they really helpful? They'll always tell you, well, ask your doctor if this medication is good for you, knowing full well that they've already sent the detailed people around to the doctor and given them all sorts of wonderful pep talk and given him all sorts of free samples so that he will tell you, oh, it's a great drug, but he's never looked at the actual hard scientific studies on these products. And he's getting all of his information from the detailed people who work for the company that's saying, ask your doctor if this is the right drug for you. Well, let's talk a little bit about the psychotropic drugs. In other words, these drugs for mental conditions that they're selling so much of that are doing far more harm than they are good.
Well, that's right, Dr. Stan. Especially, I'm terribly concerned about our children and what's going on here. We have extensive use of antidepressant medication, ADHD medication, and antipsychotic medication, all being used on children where there's no proof they're effective, and there are serious risks, suicide being one of them, diabetes being another. that occur with the use of these various medications, and they're really, unfortunately, being handed out like candy these days.
And, of course, are there scientific studies? Are these approved to be used in children?
Well, the antidepressants, that's always a debatable issue. It, you know, that there's constant warnings about suicide risk, and, of course, you know, it's kind of a paradox because, you know, in some cases a child might be suicidal who's put on them in the first place. But nevertheless, lots of people who take antidepressants become very, very agitated. They experience extreme neurological disorientation and can easily become suicidal, issues that the companies that produce these drugs knew long before they put them on the market and never told anybody about. And so we have serious suicide risk. With the ADHD medications like Ritalin and Concerta, we have, I mean, these are speed, they're narcotics, and we have children hallucinating on them. We've got over 50 cardiovascular deaths from these drugs in children. You know, we've got serious side effects relating to the use of narcotic, plus the fact that in animal studies, over the course of a lifetime, the mice that they study have basically burned out nerves when they're adult mice and are very, very depressed. And so we don't even know what we're doing long-term with a whole generation of children. And to top it off, they're now giving children atypical antipsychotic medications like Zyprexa, which happens to be Eli Lilly's best-selling drug. Eli Lilly, get this, they're selling a drug over $4 billion a year of Zyprexa. Over 25% of the company's entire drug sales, one drug being given mostly to children for an unapproved use that doctors are doing and that they've marketed it for, which is illegal. And they're having the states pay for this. They're having the taxpayers pay for this. This one drug costs over $500 a month, and they're using it to modulate behavior so a child might not you know, have a behavioral outburst. It's absolutely ridiculous, Dr. Stan.
Well, I share your concern for it, and I think people really have to realize that sometimes just proper nutrition can make all the difference in the world as far as your psychological outlook, as far as your emotions, as far as your depression, possibly depression, is concerned. What about that? Have you looked at all into the relationship between nutrition and the functioning of the brain?
Well, of course, Dr. Stan, as a clinical nutritionist, I have over 20 years of experience helping people naturally boost their brain and their brain function. It all starts with a clean diet. We've got to get the chemicals and the food coloring out of the diet. These things are neurotoxins, neuropoisons. We've got, you know, the pesticides on the food. We've got additives like MSG and aspartame, which are extremely nerve toxic. We have the food colorings, which come from coal tar, another German product of Bayer and Bathus. I mean, these people have been poisoning the American food supply since the late 1930s with these coal tar-derived coloring agents, which are neurotoxins. I mean, they come from coal tar just like the same poisons that were used in nerve gas that were produced for the Nazis. I mean, this is just absolutely bizarre that the FDA would allow these things in the food supply, yet they do. At any rate, we have a lot of chemicals that irritate the brain. Those anybody struggling with mood should get rid of. Then we need to get good food into people. We need to get them eating fresh fruit, vegetables. They need to get eggs for breakfast, where you have a lot of choline and vitamin B12 for the brain. We need fresh fish, good quality fish that has the good omega-3 oils in it, especially the DHA. And individuals can work a lot on cleaning up their diet. It makes a huge difference for children.
Well, now, certainly, as far as the children are concerned, what about fluoride? What about the mercury in vaccines, things of that sort?
Well, these are huge issues also, Dr. Stan. The mercury issue, every time a person gets a flu vaccine at any age that has mercury in it, the more of these you get, the more likely you are to have Alzheimer's disease when you get older. So older people getting their flu shot every winter, I mean, that's a huge problem for cognitive decline because once the mercury's getting into the nervous system, it can't get out, and or not easily anyway. And so the whole issue there is it's very nerve toxic. And, of course, with all the vaccines they're giving, many of them still contain the mercury preservative, and the massive numbers of these being given to children and damage the nervous system as it's evolving.
So how about this idea of giving a six-month-old, influenza vaccine that contains the mercury, or giving it to a pregnant woman in her first trimester when a fetus in her womb is going to get the child in her womb is going to get the maximum amount of concentration of mercury. Isn't that a dangerous thing to do?
Well, it's incredibly dangerous, especially in the pregnant woman, because in that first trimester, of course, that's when the neurologic development is occurring. So there's a very, very high risk for nerve damage to the fetus as a result of that.
Well, then why is the CDC recommending that?
Well, I can't vouch for them. I wish I had an answer to that question. I mean, they're saying it's a preservative. They want us to believe that it's not a problem. And they're kind of now in this situation where if they admit it is a problem and take it off the market, then they're going to be flooded with lawsuits. So what they do is they sort of try to cut down the number of vaccines with it and let it kind of dwindle along. What we see here is that that's a common strategy. When they know there's a problem, they don't want to just take it off the market because that causes massive lawsuits. So what they do is they try to cut down its use, kind of reduce it a little bit, but keep using it, which somehow implies safety or that it's okay, that deflects all the lawsuits. In fact, that's what the FDA is doing right now with this big cover-up we were talking about at the top of the hour of this heart medication, Trazodone. They're leaving it on the market so that Bayer is not just immediately sued by everybody. And the longer they leave it on the market, it sort of implies that, well, maybe it really isn't a problem, even though they know darn well it is. All they're doing is deflecting lawsuits. The FDA, all it's doing right now, instead of pulling that drug off the market, is deflecting lawsuits for Bayer.
Now, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we have a few minutes. If you have a question for Byron, he's certainly been on the front lines of this battle for a long time and has carefully analyzed what's going on. Now, what about the impact of fluoride? Because, of course, we're giving fluoride, in the water, fluoridated. 67% of our communities are fluoridated. And of course, there's some pediatricians who are still giving fluoride drops to newborn children.
Well, fluoride is, the National Academy of Sciences just put out a report on fluoride toxicity, and there is no longer any excuse for adding fluoride to water. It is extremely clear that fluoride is a neurotoxin. It damages brain cells, which, of course, is why the Nazis and the Russians used it in their concentration camps to keep the inmates docile. There's no question that it does this. It leads to a public health policy based more on an attempt to control and make a public lethargic so that people don't really care about the encroachment on our rights and freedoms, whether it's health freedom or other freedoms of our Constitution, which our government somehow thinks it needs to do to keep everybody in line. So fluoride is a tool of behavioral control for the masses. Fluoride does not help teeth. In fact, the National Academy of Sciences defined the fluorosis of the teeth caused by fluoride as a disease-promoting condition, where as a result of the fluoride use over the course of a lifetime, the actual structure of the teeth is reduced by the fluorosis. Now, that's a very big change because the dentist just said in the past that's cosmetic. Now the National Academy of Sciences, based on very current science, is 100% concluding that that is actually inducing a disease state to the teeth. And that's a very serious problem because now we have a public health policy that is, in fact, contributing to disease. And I don't know how long it's going to take all these bureaucrats to figure this out, but they're poisoning Americans. They're actually causing a problem here. And there was, of course, the study that went along with this. One study showed that a serious bone cancer in young boys is caused by this fluoridation of the water supply.
And so for 55 years, they've carried out an experiment on the American people, and how many minds, how many bodies have they destroyed, and how many cancers have
they destroyed? It's almost unthinkable, Dr. Stan. I mean, I cover the fluoride issue, I cover the mercury issue, I cover the bone issue, and the statin issue in my book, Fight for Your Health, Exposing the FDA's Betrayal of America. It's available on our website at wellnessresources.com, or individuals can give us a call at 800-717-9355.
All right, fine. What have you got, Carol, calling from Arkansas? Hi, Carol. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. This is the first evening I've had really clear reception on my shortwave in some time on 5860, so I'm thankful for that. I had thank you for your programs previously on the statin drugs, and I've gotten several friends of mine who doctors had had on statin drugs to get off them after they listened to some of the tapes and read Shane Ellison's book. But now they put them on Zetia. Would you care to address Zetia and some of these other combination drugs now that they're come up with?
They're trying to reduce the cholesterol absorption from the digestive tract. And, of course, you know, just eating a little bit more fiber in your diet will do the same thing.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a minute. You hang on there, too, Carol. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go ahead, Byron. You were saying that that Zetia, is this a fiber product or is it
a
block
absorption?
No, it's
a cholesterol absorption blocking drug, and various combinations are used in conjunction with statins. But the point about these medications is that they don't replace health. It is very clear for individuals that if they maintain a healthy cholesterol level, especially during their 40s and 50s, they have a much lower risk of cardiovascular disease. That's not because they took a statin drug to lower the number. It's because they were healthy. A person just needs to get back to a good fitness program, eating a good diet, not overeating, not snacking between meals, not eating after dinner at night. These are critical issues. Now, I explain that in another book of mine called Mastering Leptin, where I talk about this critically important hormone leptin that regulates cholesterol function in the human body and how you can eat so that you don't raise cholesterol abnormally. The cholesterol content in food virtually never raises cholesterol. It's the total amount of saturated fat combined with the refined sugars that just wreak havoc. The corn sweetener, I mean, just terrible what's in the soda drinks. These are the things that destroy metabolism, create diabetes, and cause cholesterol to go up. So individuals have to get rid of this garbage out of their diets and increase their physical activity and quit snacking between meals and quit eating after dinner at night.
Okay, does that answer your question, Carol?
Well, I believe that totally. I don't believe in taking any of the drugs myself. But can you address the long term, if this blocks cholesterol from going into the body, would it not also, where your intestine is, where your nutrients and so forth go into your bloodstream and into your system, would that not also block your food nutrients? And what is the overall damage from this?
Well, it has the potential to block any fat-soluble nutrient from entering into, absorb. So it's going to reduce absorption of fatty acids, which would include your fat-soluble vitamins that are contained in your diet, such as beta-carotene and vitamin E and vitamin K. So a lot of the nutrients that we're trying to get in would indeed be reduced by the medication. So that's a problem with any kind of fat-blocking or cholesterol-blocking drug.
And I think that, Carol, they're looking at the numbers. They're not looking at the patient. Hey, thanks so much for calling. And
all right.
I think you got two votes against Zetia.
Okay? Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Okay. And we're going to be back here in just a moment. But, Byron, thank you so very much. It's been a real pleasure having you here. And I really enjoy having you on. I hope we can get you on again on a regular basis.
Well, Dr. Stan, I have a new book coming out in about a month. It's called The Leptin Diet. I'd love to share that with you.
Boy, we're right ahead, Doc. You were saying you have a new book coming out in about a month?
About a month. I have a new book. It's called The Leptin Diet. It's going to explain in great detail how to utilize this powerful hormone leptin to overcome food cravings, cardiovascular disease risk, and just get people on track losing weight properly.
All right, God bless, and thanks very much for being with us tonight.
You take care.
Goodbye. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Our guest this evening has been Byron Richards, and, well, of course, this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And quite frankly, we need your help so we can continue doing what we're doing. And every week we are on about 60 different outlets of one sort or another across America. Internet, shortwave, satellite. We certainly are on a number of stations. Our Saturday program goes to about 30 stations. And anyway, we are trying to get people to think and to question. And that's our job. And we're trying to get you to understand that so much of what's going on as far as medicine is hazardous to your health. And it's not because the doctors are not trying to do the best, but they will never hear a lot of the things you will hear here on Radio Liberty. And then let me just mention, we do have an excellent DVD by our good friend, certainly Dr. Russell Blaylock, called Nutrition and Behavior. That's nutrition and behavior. And there's a very definite relationship between what you eat and how you behave and your psychological outlook. So let me roll today. Certainly one of our most interesting guests, and she's going to be giving two talks. Chris Pinto will be here, and he'll be talking for an hour and a half on his award-winning documentary, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. We need to know if you're going to be able to be here, so give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 to make your reservation, and then bring your friends. You'll find it a fascinating time. We're still, of course, hoping to be able to republish Dr. Dennis Cuddy's excellent book, The Secret Records Revealed. That Secret Records Revealed, it was a very popular book, probably 6 or 8 years ago. It's out of print. So we've added an index, we've added an epilogue, and brought it right up to date. If we can get enough people to get a case of his books, why, we'll get it reprinted. So if you're interested in a case of Dr. Cuddy's books at the same rate as we had our previous book, which was my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope many of you go to our website at radioliberty.com. Now you can listen to our programs there on the Internet 5 hours a day and not get much of anything accomplished. You can actually, of course, find all the videos and DVDs and books we offer, things that you're not going to get elsewhere if you want to understand, of course, about how we helped the Nazi scientists after the war, and even many of the most ruthless of the Nazis. That's Operation Paperclip. If you want to know what really happened in the O.J. Simpson trial, why, you need to get my four-tape set on the O.J. Simpson. You've never heard the truth about that. If you want to know about the Bohemian Grove, you want to know about, and of course, the four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove. So, Skull and Bones. What is the Skull and Bones Society that both George Bush and John Kerry belong to? Why, it's all there. And then, of course, remember, pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. But right now we're going to ask that you hold your calls because we have with us one of my favorite guests, Mr. Patrick Wood, from the August Review. And, of course, back in the late 1970s, Patrick was working with our friend, Professor Anthony Sutton, writing two books, The Trilateralists Over Washington, Part 1, Trilateralists Over Washington, Part 2. Is there really a small group of men who control America? And working in concert with other men of great power and wealth from other countries, Asia, from Europe, that really control most of the wealth of the world and certainly the governments and the banking system and the corporations? Well, with Mr. Patrick Wood here, let's let him tell you about this incredible organization called the Trilateral Commission, what it's really all about. And Patrick, you pick up the story.
Well, good evening, Dr. Stan. We've been following and hitting on the concept that the members of this organization called the Trilateral Commission are very often seen all around the globalist events that are concerning us today the most, like the North American Union, for instance, the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and the port scandal on the East Coast and the West Coast. These people keep showing up just at the wrong time. Well, we started following the Trilateral Commission and their members back in the 1970s, and what we found back then was specifically they said that they would build a new international economic order. And we wrote about that back then, realizing that considering who was saying that, we were in great danger. And now looking back in hindsight, exactly what they have done is to create a new international economic order. We can see a little bit more clearly with hindsight now that they had some other political aspirations as well, which they flatly denied back in those days. But we can look backwards now and see that the members of the Trilateral Commission and its members have had a hammerlock, that is a domination on the executive branch of the U.S. government since the election of James Earl Carter in 1976. They have dominated every administration since, had incredible influence, and you have to consider that the Trilateral Commission is not government, and it's not a government commission. It's a private group of people. But initially, there was only 300 members from around the world, and only one-third of those were from North America. And only about 90 of those were actually from the United States. The number's a little bit higher today. But the majority of the Trilateral Commission are foreign to the U.S., and those that are of the U.S., it's been between 90 and 120 over the years. Those men have disproportionately shown up in every administration that we've had since James Earl Carter. And you have to think that there's other people who could lead our country, other than these 120 men. But they continue to show up. They set out to do a radical thing to create a new international economic order. They have created, in fact, a new international economic order with political overtones of governance by them, of course.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, I guess Patrick Wood of the August Review, pick up the story there.
Well, I'm just going to fast forward a little bit. I want to confess to you, I was bad this week, Dr. Stan. I have an organization I belong to where we have to stand and face the flag and give the Pledge of Allegiance. How many times have we done that over in our lifetime? So starting when they're in grade school. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and so on, for the republic for which it stands. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And as I was saying that this week, I just thought to myself, I really need to rewrite the Pledge of Allegiance and get it ready and updated for a more appropriate, more appropriate pledge, probably coming soon when this new international economic order wraps itself up in America with its introduction into the North American Union. And so I did that. I didn't feel good about it, but I had to rewrite it, Stan. And here's what I wrote. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the North American Union and to the oligarchy for which it stands, three nations under humanism, divisible with servitude and injustice for all. And that pretty much wraps up where the members of the Trilateral Commission and the Commission itself and people like them who have surrounded them over the years, this is the end result of where they have brought us since 1973 when the Trilateral Commission was formed by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Well, I think the interesting thing to me is that since the administration of Jimmy Carter, either the president or the vice president in every successive administration, Democrat or Republic, has come from the membership roles of the Trilateral Commission. And, of course, right now, the man who's really running Washington, D.C., executive branch, is Dick Cheney. And, of course, he's had to drop out of the Trilateral Commission. But don't you worry, his wife took his place there, and maybe she would have been there anyway. But Lynn Cheney is holding his place open for him on the Trilateral Commission. But, the difficulty is that these people have sworn an oath to uphold our Constitution, and they hate America. They want to destroy America. They want to establish this new economic order. They want to do away with national sovereignty. They have lied. They have intentionally lied, and nobody ever comments on that. And they get away with it administration after administration.
They do, and they have, and at this point they will continue to, because once political power, this is just an unfortunate thing about politics. Once political power consolidates to such, to this point where they have this kind of influence, it tends to get...
Hold that thought for just a moment. Sure. We bring our other stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Patrick Wood. And Patrick was talking about this North American partnership, this North American union, call it what you will, rebuilding a North American community. And we were talking about the fact that the members of the Trilateral Commission have dominated, either as the president or vice president, every administration since the Carter administration. They are dedicated to the destruction of the sovereignty of our nation and the destruction of our Constitution. And yet they have all sworn to uphold our Constitution. They have simply lied. I mean, when you swear to uphold the Constitution, that's never your motive. That's a treasonous act. It's perjury. And yet Patrick is saying that it really doesn't matter because they hold the reins of power in their grubby little hands. Go ahead.
Well, that's right. The political power tends to harden once it finds itself in place, and the influence of the Trilateral Commission over the executive branch has hardened certainly in the last 10 to 15 years. It's going to be virtually impossible at this point to get their influence out of the executive branch, and it's not just the president or vice president that sums up their influence. They've had people in position over the years in cabinet positions and other important economic positions. For instance, secretaries of state, the president's trade representative has often been a member of the Trilateral Commission. Paul Wolfowitz, for instance, is president of the World Bank. You've got a couple of chairmen of the Federal Reserve thrown in there as well, Paul Volcker and Alan Greenspan. It's all of this influence that when you consider all of these people who are sprinkled throughout the government's strategic positions, this is where they have moved their new international economic order forward pretty much under the radar of anybody, the public included. And here they are now, quite smug in their position that they have brought us They have brought us NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. They have brought us CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement. They're about to bring us the FTAA, the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas. They've brought us the World Trade Organization, and now they're bringing us the North American Union, which is the consolidation of Mexico, the United States, and Canada. This will be the first political combination that's not purely economic, although their economic interests are there. But what they're envisioning now for North America is something roughly equivalent to the European Union, where we will have open borders, free travel between the countries, free flow of goods and plant, manufacturing plants, etc. And we'll be one big happy family, eh?
Well, I think that what people do not understand is that this is the end of the sovereignty of the United States. It's the end of our guarantees of constitutional rights, of habeas corpus, of a legitimate government, of an honest police force. It is the end of America, and the average American has no idea of the significance of the security and prosperity partnership, of the transcontinental highway that is being in the process of now, even now, beginning to be built, all the way from Mexico right on up to Canada, not up into Manitoba, up into Canada. They don't understand. They find it impossible to believe that the leaders of both political parties hate America and are doing everything they can to simply consolidate all power in Washington, D.C., and create a government as venal as the one that we separated from almost 225, a little over 225 years ago, when, of course, we had our American Revolution.
Exactly. They completely disdain the concept of national sovereignty. Those who believe in a strong sovereign policy, those who believe in a strong nationalistic policy, are literally viewed as the enemy. To them, we are the enemy who must be eliminated. Our thinking must be eliminated from the sphere of thinking, and we're the only thing standing in the way of them completely accomplishing their socialistic goals of bringing the whole world together in one big trading block and one big governmental block as well.
But it's really going to be under their control, because somebody's going to have to be in charge of this, and they intend to have their people in charge.
Well, they're already there, Dr. Stan. I mean, they've had this influence now in the executive branch, and it's not just in America, too. We're only talking about the United States, but you must remember that globalization is global, and that two-thirds of the members of the commission are from overseas. They're either from Europe, Japan, and some instances there's some from Mexico now and Canada as well for North America, and from Asiatic countries. It's not just Japan as it started out to be. There's actually some Chinese and some other people, and then also in Europe it's quite a smattering. We have a couple from the Mideast now as well. But these people from other countries are in the same. They have gone to their countries and done the same thing. Let me put it that way. They have kept the same strategy of unduly influencing their local governments for the sake of international business.
Well, would you like to talk a little bit about the Security and Prosperity Partnership, this idea of doing away with national sovereignty and creating this North American community? We see what this is going to lead to by what's happening in Europe today, but to the average American, they don't understand there is an effort to impoverish the American people and turn us into a third world nation. People say that couldn't happen.
It's too big. It's so big a story. People just disconnect. They say it's too big. It can't be real. It's almost like a James Bond movie. Some fantastic plot that is obviously bogus, but it still makes good entertainment to watch it. The Security and Prosperity Partnership, and the AKA the North American Union, which is being talked about today, and at least the alternative press. This, again, has the Trilateral Commission fingerprints all over it from the get-go. This is an extension of the North American Free Trade Agreement, which also was a complete trilateral endeavor that was signed. It was negotiated and signed into law under both Presidents H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton. back in 1994. It actually went into play. And NAFTA has been a disaster, by and large, for America. The other countries, Canada and Mexico, may have gotten something out of it, but it's been a killer to us. And this is NAFTA on steroids now, to bring Mexico, Canada, and the United States together into one super state, if you will, similar to the European Union, similar to a common market initially, and then to bring governance in on top of that to ultimately have a parliament that will be a North American parliament. They are slicing up our sovereignty right now like a diced carrot. And they're doing it off the record, off the budget, off the congressional radar screen. There's no legislation for this whatsoever. Congress has been completely run around at this point. They have no input, not even advice and consent. We're almost on the verge. If you look at it one way, we're almost on the verge of a coup d'etat by the executive branch to nullify our Congress into basically just a rubber stamp.
In fact, our Congress has not been notified of the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and a lot of the people there, and we've actually heard this from people at Judicial Watch, who's been tracking this as well. And one of the senators, when asked about it, said, well, this couldn't be true, because if it was true, we would know about it. And the trouble is, if it was true, they wouldn't want the Senate or the Congress to know about it. They simply want to have this become a fait accompli. And one day we find that America, as we've known it, this country that really had offered more freedom to more people than any other nation in all recorded history, will cease to be.
Right. One might think that our Congress, who is supposed to interact with the intelligence community in this country, namely the CIA, the FBI, etc., you'd think they would be in the know on a lot of issues. But when you consider that looking at the membership list of the Trilateral Commission over the years, that the list of commissioners include virtually all the leaders of the intelligence community, it's no wonder that information doesn't flow to the Senate and Congress like it ought to.
And we notice that Thomas Foley, who for many years was Speaker of the House, is, of course, a member of the Trilateral Commission.
Yes.
You wonder why, of course, the unions aren't upset about this. That's because the union leaders are part of the Trilateral Commission.
Many of them are, and starting in 1973, the Trilateral Commissioner Rockefeller very wisely chose leaders of the major unions back then to involve in this whole globalism scheme.
And so they're in on the scheme. They're simply betraying the working men, and they have no idea they're being betrayed by their leaders, but then we're being betrayed by our leaders, too.
Exactly right.
Because they have a different agenda, because they dream a different dream.
Yes. And unfortunately, it's a very socialistic dream. It's not, it has, we talk about our country being a republic, as the Pledge of Allegiance says, that, you know, declares we're a republic. We're not a democracy. We were not founded as a democracy in this country. We're not a socialist democracy either, although this is the intent. The same old worn out, failed policies of, socialism and Marxism in the past 100+ years. Are still alive and well, and this is exactly the kind of world that they have in mind for us in the very near future, and I say very near future.
This thing is moving at a rapid pace. They intend to have this all consolidated within a relatively few years, and of course they want to use the threat of terrorism as a justification for establishing an authoritarian society. Well, we've got to give up our freedom. After all, we have to fight the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's probably been dead for a year or two now. But that's all right. The American people still fear him. We know he's alive because we see his pictures on television, and they tell us he's just released another tape, threatening, of course, to attack America and destroy this nation. And that has to be true because we heard it on television. Well, if you're out there, you'd like to give us a call. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Patrick Wood of the August Review. Well, Patrick, as you talk to people around the country about this, what sort of response do you get? I mean, you do a great job of getting information out, but what is your impression? Do you think that more and more people are beginning to understand, or do you think most people say this just couldn't happen in America?
I think a lot of people are still saying that it couldn't happen in America. They just got their head in the sand. But I'm somewhat encouraged, Dr. Stan, that there are more and more people seeing the big picture. And the key here is one needs to focus on the right set of data in order to see the big picture correctly. It's kind of like looking at one of those pictures of random dots. It looks like random dots and colors and stuff, and it looks like it's a complete nonsense picture. But you stare at it for a while, and all of a sudden the picture jumps out. It's kind of a magical thing when the optical illusion clears, and all of a sudden you see a picture within this chaos. When people see the big picture, their jaw drops to the ground. That's the first reaction. The second reaction is they're not going to get away with it. And people get fighting mad. I have to say, I've had a lot of people, read this information that we put out, and they begin to see clearly for the first time the scam that's been pulled on America starting in 1973. And they get really, the first thing is they get angry, and then they immediately want to be moved to some kind of action. And, of course, we're not in the business of specifying what people ought to do, but one thing that has to be done between now and probably 2010 would be a good place. Somehow, the people in this country need to completely repudiate and regurgitate this new international economic order, this North American Union Security and Prosperity Partnership stuff, and get these people out of the positions that they're in our government, and take back control of our government again. Our political parties are broken. Both political parties are broken. Republicans and Democrats, they're both broken beyond repair, and that's because of the influence of these very same people in the Trilateral Commission. They have wrecked our political system.
And, of course, they control the leadership of both political parties. And
they do.
This is what the American people don't understand.
Our parties are dysfunctional today. They're so completely dysfunctional, there's no resurrecting them. They need to be killed and left and buried and left in the ground. And something new needs to come up out of the ashes.
And, of course, we need, of course, to think about alternative political parties. We need to have people mobilized. We need to get them to do away with the voting machines. After all, if one voting machine can be corrupted, they can all be corrupted. And I'd love to tell the story of that one voting machine in Ohio with a precinct with 850 people in it. And, of course, he gave 4,000 votes to George Bush in the year 2004. And when asked how this could be, the response was, well, the machine had a hiccup, of course. It had a hiccup. Ladies and gentlemen, they're rigging the voting machines, and you have to understand it. Democracy has become a fraud. We are a republic with limitations put on what the federal government can do, and none of our politicians will admit to that, because they like the power. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment. We're going to welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let me recommend that you go to Patrick Wood's website. And as soon as we get back, he's going to have Patrick tell you how to get to that website. Fascinating information, well-documented presentations, vitally important for an understanding of the danger we face today. Well, Patrick, would you like to tell our listeners how to get your website, how they can get involved with the August Review?
Yes, indeed. My website is the August Review, and it's just simply www.augustreview.com. And if they forget that, they can just go to Google or one of the search engines and type in the August Review, and it will bring us up in all instances, but it's augustreview.com. Our information is distributed without charge. There is no charge to subscribe or to read the information. We love donations, but this information is too critical to hold up for the sake of, some kind of a big subscription fee or something. We're interested in seeing our country get this information, and hopefully people will stand up and do something about it.
You actually have copies of the Trilaterals over Washington, parts 1 and 2. Are they available on your webpage?
They are available online. Yes, they are, Dr. Stan. Anybody that registers on the website can see the downloads for our original work, volumes 1 and 2 of Trilaterals over Washington. That was my joint effort with Anthony Sutton back in the late 70s and early 80s. And it does give an important historical perspective on the Trilateral Commission and their operation back then. It also gives a very important look at the methods that they use to achieve what they've achieved. And the methods basically have not changed. They're using the same kind of game plays that they used back then. They worked well then. They continue to work well. So it's not like we're ignorant of what they're doing at all. We've seen the same kind of strategies been used over for the last 30 years really, and we see exactly the same thing happening today. It's just that now the chips on the table are much greater than they were back then.
Oh, do you think when you were working with Tony Sutton that he recognized the spiritual forces that are energizing the Trilateral Commission?
I don't expect that he did. We had a lot of conversations about spiritual issues and stuff, and I don't believe that Tony was, thought along spiritual lines very much at all.
And that's really such a shame, because I wish I'd known when I knew him here, when he lived here in Santa Cruz, yes. Where I live now, and I might have been able to get him to understand that this is really a spiritual battle, and what energizes these people in the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bohemian Grove and Skull and Bones and all of these organizations really is a spiritual force that is energizing and driving them and rewarding them.
Well, yes, and Tony had a very clear insight into a lot of things. He certainly understood how things worked as far as money and power are concerned, but he didn't really see beyond that or above that to understand the spiritual dimension. Just an anecdote to that, Dr. Stan, I debated face-to-face two times, actually, with the executive director of the Trilateral Commission back then, Dr. Charles Heck. He's now a member of the Trilateral Commission, by the way, but back then he was just executive director. And I found out that Charles was a practicing member of the Christian Science Church. And the Christian Science philosophy or religion does not believe in the concept of evil. They believe very, very pointedly that evil only exists in the mind of those who allow it to exist. And if we don't believe it exists, it doesn't exist. And
but of course, they also believe if you don't believe you're going to die, you're not going to die. And they believe, of course, that everything is in the mind, and there is no illness. And if you get your mind in the right place, all illness will disappear.
Well, exactly. Now, this is the man that was running the Trilateral Commission. Now, they weren't all Christian Scientists. I'm not saying that, but I just point that out as an anecdote. This kind of person would look at me right across the table and say, well, what's wrong with that? anything that was brought up that wasn't good for us, he said, well, what's wrong with that? In his mind, there was no such thing as evil. There was no such thing as sickness. There was no such thing as bad, whatever bad might be. And all it was just sometimes some obstacles that they needed to believe a little bit harder to get around.
Well, now, was he the gentleman you asked about their logo? And for our listeners out there who have never seen the logo of the Trilateral Commission, if you look very carefully, you'll see it's made up of three arrows. And you look on the inside of the arrows, you'll see a six.
Yes.
And of course, they're joined together in the middle by an upside-down broken cross. What was he the gentleman you talked to about that?
Well, the original logo has been changed significantly. It's been stylized a little bit more, and it's not quite as obvious as it was in the beginning. But in the beginning, it very clearly was three sixes that formed a circle, and they were kind of chained together, like elephants holding on to each other's tail, in a parade. The sixes were in a circle, and they made up kind of an odd looking logo, but that became the logo.
We'll be back in just a moment here. Remember, the logo of the Trilateral Commission, 666. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Patrick Wood. And Patrick, on another program, commented that he had asked one of the people about their logo. Who did you ask, and what was the response?
You mean who to ask originally?
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, I talked to, that was something I did talk to Charles Heck once upon a time back then, too. But between Tony and I, we debated probably, I would guess, maybe 18 or 20 members of the Trout Auto Commission. And it was a pretty routine thing that we would bring up, you know, like, well, what's the significance of the logo? And, they would always say it was just, nothing, you know, we just, everybody's got to have a logo, and we had a graphic designer, and, then, you know, this is what they came up with, and it is wonderful, and it's just for our letterhead, and basically it doesn't mean anything. But, it clearly meant something, and, the old saying is true, birds of a feather flock together. And they had a mission, and they had, they had a goal, and this is the logo that they chose, and pretty clearly anybody looking at it would say, oh, that's 666. Well, did they identify themselves with the Bible? No. Did they identify themselves with the Book of Revelation in the Bible or Daniel? No. But nevertheless, this is what they picked.
And you have to ask why. We know the World Future Society, which, of course, vaguely interlocks with the Trout Auto Commission. They have overlapping of members, and certainly their logo for many years, until we began talking about it, was a circle made of a three sixes. And so
yes,
much of the embedded imagery that we see in art today has those numbers over and over again.
Yes.
Six.
It clearly means something to them. It wasn't designed to mean something to us. But then all secret societies have been, they've been concerned with secret signs and, number sequences and stuff. The Fabian Socialists, for instance, were famous for introducing the White Rose. Even going back and studying some of the stuff with the Illuminati and stuff, you see these numbers pop up where it means something to one particular group but not to another group. It's kind of like gangs would be today with markings, markings of graffiti on the wall. They have their codes. And it means something to them. It's not designed to mean much to anybody else.
Right. Of course, the logo of the Council on Foreign Relations is a man riding a white horse.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Patrick Wood as we begin to explore, and of course we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Patrick is certainly one of the most knowledgeable people in the entire nation on this very subject. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Patrick Wood of the August Review. And again, Patrick, let's get the website out so people know how to get in touch with you.
Certainly. Our website is www.augustreview.com. And again, information is free. If you subscribe, or not subscribe, but if you register on our site, you will then be able to see after you log in copies of our original book work, Trout Autos Over Washington, Volumes 1 and 2, available as a download only. And gives an important historical perspective on the machinations of the Trout Auto Commission, and it makes the present a lot more understandable, knowing where these people have come from.
And, of course, who these people are, because, of course, you'll see these people moving in and out of important positions. You wonder why they would be doing what they're doing. Well, when you see them all together and you realize they are all part of this exclusive little clique, and there's about 130 in the Americans in the Trilateral Commission today.
That's right.
But these people, in essence, control our government. And, they make mockery out of this idea of democratic elections, and they control the media, and they control banking, having had Paul Volcker and Alan Greenspan as members of the Trilateral Commission, these men control the Federal Reserve System for almost a quarter of a century, the
yes.
Central Bank of America.
Exactly. And they've got their fingers into all the right crevices right now. To have a hammerlock. I use that word hammerlock because I used to watch wrestling when I was younger, and when you get that kind of maneuver on somebody, you can't get out of it. It's virtually impossible to break it. And these people have worked very hard to get into the positions they're in, so that they might control and virtually every major decision, they're able to control it to their own benefit.
But I think the average individual finds it so hard to believe. They say, well, you think there's a conspiracy out there. How do you respond when they say, well, you're one of these people that thinks of a conspiracy?
It hasn't been. There's no conspiracy whatsoever. They've been right in the open right from day one. You know, Tony was just deaf on this. He used to avoid the conspiracy word like the plague because he says, look, I have not said anything that I have not documented in some public work that was released by members of the Trilateral Commission themselves, either from books or papers or speeches or newspaper interviews, you know, those types of things. There was nothing introduced in our work that was outside of those types of sources. And still, even today, there's not, Dr. Stan. We don't go taking any information from any kind of hearsay, opinion sites, blogs, or anything else. We only look at what these people are declaring themselves that they're doing, and that's what we're reporting on, and that tells the story. We don't need to look and make things up along the way. This is what they have said they're going to do. This is what they've done.
And, of course, they know exactly what's going on. You have the feeling that everything is organized, everything is planned, and step by step by step, they're moving us from what I believe is freedom into a feudalistic society, with, of course, them as the feudal lords and us as the serfs. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Patrick, that, as I said earlier, certainly one of the most best-informed people on the Trilateral Commission you'll find in the United States today, because, of course, he was there at the ground floor back in the late 1970s when, of course, this whole issue was coming to the fore. And the Trilateral Commission took the control of the American government during the Carter administration, and it's pretty well their members have been in key positions in every administration since then. And since there's only so few of them in their nation of 300 million people, this did not happen by accident. They simply promote their people into key positions and use that power to transform America and to destroy the sovereignty of our nation. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it is. And they are marching to their own drum, not to ours. They could care less about what the people think. We're merely a nuisance and an impediment to their creating their new international economic and political world order.
And, of course, they're moving at a very, very good rate. Now,
yes.
They don't want to move too rapidly because they don't want to alarm the people, but they really intend to unite the United States and Mexico and Canada. Their current target, as Patrick has said, is a year 2010. But by then, of course, there'll be no border. We will begin to unite our police forces, our military. We will have certainly only one border to really guard. That will be southern Mexico. That's the way we'll be able to keep the terrorists out, and so we won't have to worry about people going across the borders because we'll all be part of one big happy family.
Yes, and I would want to mention to your listeners also, Dr. Stan, that for those listeners who have been concerned about the open border with Mexico and all of the immigration control issues and stuff that we're faced with right now, and essentially what looks to be a refusal of our government to shut the southern border, if you understand it in light of Trilateral Commission policy and what's in store with this North American Union plan, you won't have any problem understanding why they refuse to shut the border with Mexico. It's not in their plan. Just that simple.
And
open border is going to be a necessity for their plan of a North American Union.
And what they really intend is amnesty for everybody's here. You know, they're all going to get amnesty. And as the president said, I do not believe in amnesty. I'm against amnesty. I just want everybody who's here to be able to stay here and become an American citizen. That's all.
Yep.
And he says, of course, I'm against, any language but English being the official language of the United States. English should be the official language of the United States. And yet, if you go on the president's website, you'll find that most of his major speeches are translated into Spanish. So why would he say one thing and do another?
Yes. And I would also have to say this, that in the straw polls that have been done within Canada and Mexico, the people in those countries are universally very negative towards any idea of North American unity. They don't want any more part of us than we want of them. And, you know, this is a good thing. You know, good fences make good neighbors. And the Mexican people don't want to lose their sovereignty for the sake of the United States, and Canadians also want to maintain their identity and their sovereignty. I'm talking about the people now. The only people that are shoving this down our throat are the elites of our three countries.
And I think it's so important to understand that there really is a ruling elite. I mean, we've had people like C. Wright Mills and others have talked about it. In fact, you go up on the Council on Foreign Relations website on history. I was there today, and they were talking about how these people like C. Wright Mills and some of the others had been talking about this ruling elite and been critical of them. Now, this is the Council on Foreign Relations. They're sort of a farm club for the Trilateral Commission. What's the relationship between the CFR and the Trilateral Commission today?
Yes, and basically the Trilateral Commission completely dominates the CFR. I'm sure a lot of members of CFR would be offended if have that suggested, but 40% of the directors of the CFR are members of the Trilateral Commission. Virtually all of the top leadership are members of the Trilateral Commission. And, every study, every important study that comes out of it has been ordered by members of the Trilateral Commission. So one has to conclude that the CFR has just become basically a working tool, if you will, for the Trilateral Commission. Like you said, a farm club.
And then if you're there and you're found to be good enough, then you get up with the real boys. You go into the major league, which is the Trilateral Commission today.
Right. That's exactly right. And so the people that want to play along, the other members of the Trilateral Commission or the CFR, are that's often the fishing pool to which they go to pick appointees and, people for committees and other, things, that go on to task forces and so on, that they need, where they need operatives to accomplish some particular goal.
And, of course, Richard Haass, who today is the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, just...
Yes.
Just happens to be a member of the Trilateral Commission.
Just happens to.
Right. Then, of course, David Rockefeller was the president of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was the vice president for many years,
yeah.
And then the president for, a decade or more. And now he's the honorary chairman of the CFR, but he's the man who really runs the Trilateral Commission, wouldn't you say?
Yes, exactly. And, if you go down the list, the list of the Trilateral Commission, the current list of Trilateral Commission members is on our website, augustreview.com. And if you go and look at the North American group, just read down the list and see who's on it. It will clear up the differences in political parties for you completely. For instance, Bill Clinton was a member of the Trilateral Commission, and so was George H.W. Bush. How do you reconcile this? Well, when you see them arm in arm now, Bush and Clinton, traveling the globe, talking about foreign aid, this, that, and the other, that rings true when you see, they were members of the same group all along. You see people like Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State, is a member. She's been a member for a long time. You see Dianne Feinstein. What the heck, you say, well, what's she doing in there? And then you see Henry Kissinger right alongside her name. And, some people from the present, some people from the past that have been in and out in government. You see some academics. You see some very powerful politicians. By the time you're done reading this list, you go, wow, this is a very eclectic group of people. But once you take away the screen of Republican and Democrat and liberal and conservative, and you take those concepts out of this, what you have are a bunch of raw people, if you will, all dedicated to creating a new world order fashioned after their philosophy, and it has nothing to do with political parties that we see in our country today.
And, of course, it has nothing to do with the Constitution.
Nothing.
Which many of them have sworn to uphold. And, of course, the ultimate in hypocrisy is when you promise to do one thing and then you do exactly the opposite, and yet nobody has ever called these people what they are, and that is they are traitors to America because they want to destroy our constitutional system of government and replace it with an authoritarian system, of course, in the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
And, what's really so incredible to me, Patrick, is that so many good people who should be aware of what's going on are going right along with this, and so many of our Christian leaders are simply championing whatever the president does. because, of course, he's a Christian, and he wouldn't do anything to hurt our country.
Well, I know. Politics is very mean and very ugly many times, and it's unfortunate that, you know, that the Christians in America have been suckered even one more time. They were suckered, I remember, the same thing happened with Bill Clinton, because he had a religious spin, and so did Jimmy Carter, remember, he had a religious spin, and Christians ran after him, and unfortunately, the Christians in America, and perhaps even around the world, they share a lot with the concept of sheep. They're called sheep, we're called sheep in the Bible. Sheep are not particularly bright animals, I'm afraid. They're easily led.
And I think, really, of course, this is in large part because the leaders of the Christian community are going right along with this.
Yes.
They really want so much to believe that we have a Christian leader. After all, we elected him because he promised to do something about abortion. He promised to do something about morality. He promised to put a good, people under the Supreme Court who believed in the Constitution and would help us restore America. We're almost 6 years into this administration, and how many children have we saved? I mean, what have we done as far as the morality of our nation? And where is the outcry from the leaders of our Christian communities saying, why haven't you done what you promised to do?
Well, that's right. Of course that's right. And, you know, I heard something from a friend the other day, a couple of months ago, Dr. Stan, that If all the babies in America that have been aborted had not been aborted, we would have no Social Security problem today. If all the babies that have been aborted had not been aborted, we would have no problem with maintaining a military that would be second to none in the world. if we didn't abort all the babies that got aborted in the last decades, our country would be populated with Americans today. And not Mexicans.
And, of course, people have to understand that they, in many respects, have to bring the Mexicans in to get them paying into the Social Security system because, the Social Security system, faces bankruptcy. And so a lot of these Mexican people from the south of the border are coming in using phony Social Security numbers, paying into Social Security, and that money is actually being put one side. The government knows they're using phony Social Security numbers, and they're setting up accounts for them when this whole thing comes down, and they, of course, become part of the North American community.
And that's exactly right. And all of the lip service that goes to Mexicans being willing to do jobs that Americans won't do. If we had the babies back that had been aborted, there would be plenty of people to do all the jobs that we needed to do in the first place. And there was a time in our history where all the jobs somehow miraculously got done. You know, everything got done. And, we didn't need to bring in another slave labor class, if you will, to do our dirty work for us.
Well, of course, I remember during the Depression, I mean, we had all the people from, many of them from Oklahoma, we called them Okies. And
that's right.
And they were, of course, people that lost their homes back there because they had a terrible period of global warming at that time. They had the Dust Bowl. A lot of the topsoil blew away in Oklahoma. They couldn't make a living there. And, of course, then they began picking the crops here. And they were the crop pickers, and then, of course, after they began to mold back into society, we brought in a Becerra program, and we had people coming in, labor gangs coming in from Mexico, would work here for 3, 4, 6 months, and they would go home again. But that is not the plan. The plan, I really believe, is exactly as you said. They are using this immigration, this illegal immigration program, and they're not, I believe, 11 million. I think the figure is closer to 20 million. According to government officials who will speak openly in private, and Bear Stearns, who's analyzed this, at least 20 million illegal immigrants here. And the president intends to keep them all here, in fact, to massively increase the number coming into our country as we begin to lower our living standards and hopefully raise theirs.
I would give some kind of a prediction, just an opinion type prediction on how we will resolve this in the end. It won't be by an immigration bill or anything like that necessarily, but I'll just make a prediction that what will resolve the illegal immigrants here will be some kind of a major trade agreement with Mexico some kind of a special diplomatic agreement made with Mexico, where Mexico will give up some sort of concession that will please the members of the Trilateral Commission in terms of trade and, you know, regional trade and so on, and that in return for those concessions, that we will allow the illegal immigrants to begin to stay here legally with amnesty. Just a prediction and just my opinion.
Well, I think that the decisions are already made, and we can see, of course, what happened this last week when the president's unconstitutional legislation was went through that simply guts the Geneva Convention, allows torture of anybody who's accused of being a terrorist. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, that could be anyone listening to this program who disagrees with the government. Because by disagreeing with the government, aren't you helping the enemy? Well, Patrick, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, that's good, Dr. Stan. What people really need to read up on this, and they need to understand the issues so quickly and so clearly that there's any time left over to do something meaningful in terms of you know, any kind of a protest or you know, working on the local legislators or the national legislators. We have an election coming up here. You know, you don't want to throw your vote away again. We've done that too many times in the past. We've been schnookered too many times in the past. People need to get up to speed and in one big hurry. And you know, we're not the only place that has any good information. But I'll tell you what, you know, this is the kind of stuff that you need to get your eyes open with or open to. And then you need to start making a plan yourself to, you know, what's your part going to be, if any. Because once you know this kind of information, you can't be silent anymore. If you're silent, you're complicit. You know, you become complicit. It's like they want Hassett to resign from his speakership because maybe he knew about these messages from you know, from Tom Foley from 3 years ago. So, well, if you knew about them, then you should resign. See, they're trying to hold him complicit in the whole the sex scandal with the pages in Congress. Well, this complicit thing is like once you know what's going on, once you see the picture, if you stay silent and say nothing, you become complicit with the crime. I don't say that to threaten anybody. That's just kind of the fact of the matter. You can't understand this stuff and then just be silent for the rest of your life and watch it happen. Oh, that's totally foolish. That would be worse than what they did with Hitler in World War II.
I think that we have to speak out. I believe that God will bless those who do speak out, and we're going to have to rely upon God's prevention and God's protection, I should say, because behind everything going on today, I am firmly convinced there are powerful spiritual forces. I've been studying this for 44 years, and the older I get, the more convinced I am that God does rule in the affairs of men, and our job is, of course, to be there, pointing out that we're fighting a spiritual battle on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And, of course, the Trilateralists, with their logo of 666 and an upside-down broken cross, are certainly not on the side of our Lord. Patrick, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure also. You're welcome, Dr. Stan. Thank you for having me on.
Good night. God bless.
Good night.
All right, fine. Well, I guess this evening has been Patrick Wood. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you go to his website at augustreview.com. That's augustreview.com. Patrick has some of the best information available in the nation. Well, another evening has gone by, and this is the time when I have to remind all of our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family and helping us as we reach out 5 hours a day across America, indeed across the world, try to introduce people to this spiritual battle. And, of course, we hope that many of you will seriously consider coming to our conference. We're going to have it on the 29th of October, all-day conference here in the Monterey Bay area. We're having Constance Cumby. We're flying her in from Detroit, where she lives, and bringing Chris Pinto up from Southern California. There's going to be a great lineup of speakers and all sorts of information and videos and other information that you need to have to understand what is really going on in the world today. So if you'd like to come, you have to have a reservation. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 because we're serving lunch. We need to have an idea, a very accurate idea, how many people are going to be there. And looks like we're going to have a good turnout. Then, of course, I want to mention once again, we're trying to raise support to actually republish Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, Secret Records Revealed, a book which you really should have in your library. And, of course, it's certainly one of the most important books in my library. We have added an index. We've added an epilogue. And, of course, you'll be able to get a full case of his books at the same terms as you got my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you'd like to help us get Dr. Cuddy's book reprinted, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. To really understand the spiritual nature of what we're up against, let me suggest a book we carry. It's called The Diary of a Devil Hunter, a man who was involved in Satanism and then, of course, came out and went all over the country trying to let people know what was going on, lectured the police forces, and then they'd send the people down from the FBI saying, oh, there are no, of course, satanic organizations in America. And, of course, why would the FBI try to cover up the truth? And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove. We have a four-tape set on Skull and Bone Society. We even have a four-tape set on the true story of O.J. Simpson, which you will never hear from any other source. But then, of course, you're never supposed to really understand what O.J. Simpson was really all about. We have all sorts of four-tape sets on health and health issues, but let me suggest, if you want to understand the spiritual battle, one of my favorite books, and we first read this in back about 1980, is entitled Hostage to the Devil. It's written by Malachi Martin, a Jesuit priest, and it's the story of five exorcisms, and it's available through Radio Liberty. Now you can actually get that, and my four interviews with Malachi Martin, that's those four taped interviews called the Malachi Martin Special. And, of course, then, if you'd like to get our four tape sets on Satanism and deliverance, if you'd like to get our four tape set on the supernatural, if you'd like to get the book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, written by Jana Michelson, who was actually a medium, and she was actually being trained as an apprentice to a woman who could create truly miraculous cures. She was a psychic surgeon, and she could cure the people that medicine had abandoned. Of course, it took Johanna many years to realize, of course, that this was all demonic. And, of course, as she went back and checked on those people, many of them were demonically possessed. So you have to be so careful today, because, as we said earlier, we are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. If you'd like to get a health catalog, if you'd like to get a food catalog, emergency food catalog, give us a call. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
There are many people asking questions. There are many people asking. There are many now who see the big lie.